They weren't fuck-ups or anything. In fact, other than cigarettes, they were straight edge, no drugs, no alcohol. Their only other vice was that they were seemingly obsessed with green juice, since Bastion's mom worked at a fancy juice stand. This afternoon, the boys had come from there, and Sam was filming Bastion with his acai and kale smoothie. "The girls like it," Bastion said, smiling wide. "It makes your jizz taste like flowers." When it got dark, Sam thanked the guys, broke them off 2 cigarettes each, and got in the car. His phone buzzed, and he had an irrational hope that it was Penny. It was Finn checking in about his car. Sam hit him back and tried to shake off whatever he felt when he thought of her lately. The last thing Sam had asked Penny was, "Why the escalation?" Then, "You good?" She hadn't hit him back, not once. He wanted to call her. He had said he would before Lorraine sent him into a spiral. At this point, who knew if she even wanted him to call? It had been almost 2 weeks. He didn't know who was supposed to do what next.
Penny. Andy was kind of the worst. Or he was the best. Whatever he was, everything he wanted to do was a horrendous idea. When Penny climbed out of bed, she cursed him. Him and his stupid, handsome face and the cathedral to orthodontia that was his mouth. At least he had great lips. She wondered if he was a good kisser. Penny checked her phone out of habit and sighed. There was so much free time now that she wasn't sending 1,000 texts an hour to someone who didn't have feelings for her in the first place. Penny wondered briefly if Sam was okay, and then told herself to stop worrying about him. She put on some sweats, grabbed her running shoes, and marched out. It was a cool morning for once. Instead of heading toward campus, Penny started west to the running trail by the water. It was early enough that it was mostly sleep-deprived parents with strollers and overzealous dog walkers. Andy was already at their appointed meeting place of the trash can by the first set of benches when she arrived. "You're late," he said. He was draped in swishy gray high-tech running clothes and wore matching graphite sunglasses. "Jesus, you look like someone we'd send to repopulate a new galaxy." She yawned.
"What is this outfit?"
Andy stretched his arms above his head. "There's an optimal set of clothes for every activity," he said. "This is my running ensemble." Spoken like the last remaining hope for human civilization. He smiled winningly. "You know I'm not running, right?" confirmed Penny. "I'm accompanying you around the lake primarily to rob you for ideas." Andy touched toes. Penny tried to touch hers. She reached to just below her knees. "That's fine," he said. "I need to mine your brain for information on the female psyche, so it's quid pro quo." Penny chortled. "Good luck." Truthfully, Penny wasn't above getting some exercise. Camped out at her desk, tapping away at her keyboard, writing about people who were obsessed with the computer, was messing with her head. Her haunches were taking on the consistency of veal, and there was a permanent crease above her belly button from all the sitting. Besides which, she enjoyed Andy's company. Penny wondered if it was because he was Asian or because they were into the same things. After the party, they'd settled into an easy camaraderie. He was good for her. She was getting better and better at interfacing with real-life humans on a near-daily basis. After that night, Penny had quickly disabused Andy of the notion that she wore glamorous dresses and drank champagne regularly. A few days ago, she'd met him in the library in pajamas and ate so much beef jerky she got meat sweats. "Enough with this indole kid nonsense," he'd said as she'd groaned in her protein overdose. "Next time, we're doing something less disgusting." Hence the attempt at jogging. "Okay, what do you want to know?" Andy began pacing, his arms bent in angles by his sides, pumping purposefully as he walked at a brisk clip. "Ask me about the female psyche," she challenged. "Where did you read up to?" Andy was writing a sprawling May-December romance set in the 60s between a septuagenarian Frenchwoman and man 40 years her junior, who was Vietnamese. It was a play on Marguerite Duras's The Lover. Okay, so they met at the bar, and Esmerald is married, and it's terribly fraught on the boat. Right, said Andy. And it's not a boat, Penny. It's a ship. An ocean liner. Fine. Here's what I want to know. Good morning. He nodded at a woman in a sun visor walking in the opposite direction. Then he waved at a couple similarly attired in expensive athleisure clothing. He was the goodwill ambassador of whatever 10-yard radius he occupied. Why would Esmeralda leave her husband? Andy asked. He's rich. He's in love with her. They've been in a relationship for decades. The sex, for what it's worth, is okay. Penny tried to imagine sex between 70-year-olds. What would the motivating factors be? She's not in the market for it, not explicitly anyway. Well, Penny thought about Vin, the younger guy. Is he Esmeralda's person? Does he say good morning to her in a way that's reassuring? To where it feels as if he's holding her hand for the entire rest of the day until he says goodnight? Would she be happy for him if his happiness meant that she couldn't be with him? Sure, said Andy flippantly. But Jackson's loaded. That was Esmeralda's husband. You can be with the same person for a long time and have it be fine, and meet someone else who instantly makes you see that it's broken, she said. Just like that. Basically. God. Women are such fickle bitches. It's not women, it's human. It's like a design flaw or something. Right, he said. I guess that's why your story's as dismal as it is. Robots glamoring humans to kill the babies and put them in prison. First of all, they got off, she said. The parents had stood trial but not done considerable jail time. And second, it's only dismal from the family side of things. It's actually quite triumphant from the machine's point of view. Andy laughed. The point of view you strongly identify with, I suspect. Obviously, Penny smiled. Suddenly, Penny knew why she wanted the anima to win. The parents were real life. Their stories were fixed. Their mistakes were their own. The anima's future was unknown, and, unlike Penny, whose life-altering events had happened to her, the anima shaped her destiny. It is the fate of parents, of all creators, to want better for their children, their inventions. Penny wanted more for the anima than she had had. Penny wanted to give the anima a choice. Penny wrote a quick note to herself on her phone, and Andy continued to talk. The morning was beautiful. She thought about taking off running ahead of him in an explosive bout of enthusiasm, then changed her mind. She wasn't a zany manic pixie dream girl or anything. She'd probably pass out from the exertion. You should let me take you out sometime, Andy said. Penny stopped walking. What? Penny was flabbergasted. I thought you were dating Mariska or Misha or whatever her name was. Andy was very forthright about his leggy exploits. I am, he said, and then smiled. Also, who says dating? I'm hanging out with Mariska, and I am not opposed to similarly hanging out with you. What, like, purchase for me a food unit in a romance-conducive setting? Andy scoffed. Sure, or watch with you a movie unit in a comfortable area with flattering lighting conditions. Penny considered this. Andy was handsome, though his teeth were too uniform. He was funny, too. Whenever they talked, the back and forth crackled with something unspoken. They were birds presenting plumage and making guttural noise. If nothing else, it seemed surreal that Andy could ask Penny out. Insane, even. Can I think about it? She asked. Nope, he said, though he didn't seem mad. Here, let's keep walking. They trudged in silence for a moment. Thing is, if you have to think about it, it means you're not into it, and that's difficult for someone like me to accept. Andy gestured to his Adonis-approximating physique in his spaceman jogging outfit. I can't be into someone who isn't into me. Penny smiled. Fair, she said, relieved he wasn't upset. It's just that I'm hung up on someone. Is that why when I asked you the definition of love, you had 30 sappy platitudes at the ready and sounded as if you wanted to die? Penny nodded. That blows, he said. And then, God, I've been there.
Sam. I thought only dilettantes drank iced coffee. Sam was reorganizing the tea drawer while sipping on a tumbler of iced mocha. The tea drawer was an overstuffed cubby under the coffee machines. Finn made a habit of ripping open a new box of tea instead of rooting around for the desired flavor, so there were countless half-used boxes and orphaned bags. Sam only ever reorganized it when he was in an especially foul temper. Lorraine kept her eyes hidden behind dark sunglasses. She grabbed his glass and took a sip. It had been 13 days since their last encounter, just shy of a fortnight since she'd air-kissed him as if she were some movie star, dropped the bomb about the ghost baby, and pranced back into the street without a care in the world. What do you want, Lorraine? Sam hated how much of a sitting duck he was running the local coffee shop. Anyone could come see him whenever they wanted. A hitman could take him out with zero prep. In fact, if the shooter did it at the right time, he could wait until Sam was in a baking mood and snatch roadie desserts on his way out. I wanted to see you, she said. Her perfume pierced the air around him. Great, he snapped. His hair flopped defiantly in his face as he collected every blood-orange rooibos. He hated that it was supposed to be pronounced rooibos. And why were herbal teas tisanes? So annoying. I thought we should talk about what happened. So talk, he said. He couldn't see what was so newly urgent. Let's go eat somewhere, said Lorraine. She grabbed his watered-down iced coffee and took another sip. Sam slammed the boxes of tea down on the counter between them. Can't, he said with finality. I have something to say, she said. So say. Lorraine's nails were freshly painted in metallic gold triangles over black. Can we do this somewhere more private? It was 15 minutes before closing, and there were only 2 other people in the coffee shop. When you're less busy arranging or whatever super important tea business you're doing, just say what you need to say and say it fast. I know these past few weeks have been confusing, she said carefully. Then she changed tactic and removed her shades. Don't you miss me? I miss you. Lorraine stared up at him and bit her lip. It was a rehearsed expression he instantly recognized. She made this face in moments she thought were particularly poignant. You know what, Lorraine? There were times, I swear, when I would have robbed a bank, thrown the money into Lake Travis, and tap-danced on my ancestors' graves. Anything to hear you say that. Not anymore. Sam wanted to hurt her, true. But he also realized that for once in the last 4 years, for reasons he couldn't fathom, at a point that he hadn't even noticed, he was finally over her. He was done. He felt as if he'd taken a crap the size of the Washington Monument. It was liberating. He was free. Are you serious? She scowled. You get why I couldn't be with you when I thought I was pregnant, right? That would have been a mess. I wanted a clean slate. I wanted us to start completely new. You can't keep doing this, Lore, said Sam. You only want me some of the time, and every time you do, I drop everything and bolt to you. But you're right. This is a clean slate, the cleanest slate. We're done. Lorraine, you said we weren't friends, and you're right. You know what? I don't think you even like me as a person. I love you, Sam, she said. Why are you making this complicated after all this time? You're one of those impossible knots, the kind from the myth. She sighed dramatically and smoothed some imaginary wrinkles from her dress. What do I prefer, cake or pie? He asked. What? Lorraine was confused. Simple question, Lore. Cake or pie? What team do I ride for? You make both all the time. It's a trick question, she said defiantly. I'm a pie person, Lorraine, just like you. Your favorite is strawberry, the trashy kind with condensed milk in the middle. You love it because your grandma Violet used to make it for you, and you'd hide it from your mother because she didn't appreciate you having sweets, because until you developed an eating disorder in 9th grade, you were a little on the husky side. Your words. You know why I know this? It's because I know everything about you. Not only do I know everything about you, but I remember everything about you. My folder on you is so fat and complete and bursting with nonsensical shit because I couldn't help myself. Your hands? Bullshit. Your feet. Your knobby, misshapen feet are the real treat, and that's a fact. You know, I thought you didn't know me because I was insecure or broken or poor, and then I thought about it. It's because you never asked. Ever. I want to be with someone I can talk to. I want to be with someone who automatically has a fat folder on me, someone who feels lucky when I tell them the most unflattering, scary stuff. I don't think I love you anymore, and I gotta be honest, I don't believe that you love me. Lorraine's mouth formed a straight line that went down slightly at the corners. I'm sorry you feel that way, she said. That's not an apology, he said. You know that, right? I only said it because I know you hate it. She spat. Lorraine turned around and walked out. Her hemline flipped up as she spun, and he could see the tops of her gartered stockings. She was a nightmare caricature of a male fantasy. That night he actually sent the email he'd been working on for more than a week. To Penelope Lee, from Sam Becker. Subject line, mic check 1-2. Hi. Okay, so things have been weird, and I know that I made them weird even if I'm not totally sure how. So, I'm sorry. Nothing beats a vague apology, right? So sincere. Anyway, I know it's ancient history, and if our autobiographers were to trace back to when I made it weird, it would probably have something to do with me not calling you after I said I would, after we saw each other. That was a big day for us, huh? Meeting your mom, having to smile across the counter and pretend like nothing was up. So many exciting experiences rolled into a ball of panic. The last thing I asked you was, you good? Well, are you? I think about it all the time. If you're like, new life, who dis? I totally understand. If you're not, here's a list of things that have happened in no particular order since I last bothered you. I got stupidly drunk. Hurt drunk. It was depressing. Lorraine isn't pregnant, and that was strangely disappointing, and I don't know why. I started shooting the doc, finally. I don't know exactly where it's going at all, but I love it. Turns out the kid's name is Sebastian. He goes by Bastion, which sounds so badass, and he's brilliant and insane, and I want so badly for you to meet him. Badly? Bad? I never get those right. Kind of how bemused doesn't mean amused. And how I think nonplussed means unimpressed when it means something else. Does anyone know what nonplussed means? You probably do. Don't tell anyone, but I actually don't know how irony works either. Flammable / inflammable equals also confusing. Anyway, I miss you. I know we're basically just a series of texts, but I'm glad that whatever led you to me happened. I'm grateful that you're my emergency contact. Even if you're super intense and talking to you late at night is as constructive as WebMDing a bunch of symptoms in the sense that I'm almost always convinced all roads lead to death, but I mean that in a good way. I hope you know that it's my favorite. I think I get to miss you. I feel like I've earned it. Which I know sounds weird / creepy / possessive or whatever. Our relationship, as abstract as it is the best of any relationship, I think. You're intense. So much fun, and maybe a bit nuts. And at the same time, you're super focused and passionate about how you want to live your life and your work, and it's beautiful. Also, none of this is meant to make you uncomfortable or put you on the spot. I know how you feel about compliments. You give the best advice, for a kid, etc., etc., etc. I'm happy to know you exist, and even though I feel like I screwed things up, I thought I'd let you know. And to remind you that I exist also. I hope you've been good. You good? Let me know. All the best emojis, even the embarrassing girly ones. S.
Penny. Well, that was it. Penny and Sam were officially multi-platform. Penny texted him. Hi. You're a crap emergency contact, BTW. If there's no response to, you good, the correct response is to send paramedics, everybody knows that. She waited. Great point. Such an amateur. Hi. I got your email. I'm glad you're not dead. No thanks to you. I know. I'm sorry. I missed you. Me too. Pretty good email, right? She had to hand it to him. It was the best one she'd ever gotten. Are you at work? Okay, so Penny knew this qualified as borderline psychotic behavior, and she didn't want to freak him out on some, the call was coming from inside the house, but the call was coming from inside the house. Almost. It had taken half a beer and some serious hand-wringing and 5 outfit changes, but Penny felt it was time for a grand gesture of her own. She didn't even have to entertain her usual decision tree. She'd texted him from his porch. Yeah, wrapping up. Okay, well, I'm outside. What? Here? On the swing. My swing? Sam walked out of the side door into the dark night with his phone in his hand. His face was lit blue. He continued to type. Whoa, serious escalation. Penny smiled and typed back. Boom. Hey, he called out. I guess we're doing this now? Guess so. It's scary. The swing creaked beneath her. Sam laughed. This time she had picked the perfect outfit. Penny wore Mallory's dress again. Her feet were still healing, so she'd put on sneakers. And while she'd applied lipstick, she'd changed her mind and smudged it off onto the back of her hand like a sophisticated young lady. And to make absolutely sure that she wasn't too exposed, she threw a ratty hoodie over the top. A perfectly Penny outfit. She stood up, which signaled the motion detector floodlight from the back lot to blind them both. Hell of an entrance, Sam said, lifting his arm up to shield his face. Sorry to bust in on you like this, she stammered. Penny couldn't believe it was happening. If you're busy, I can... Yeah, right, he said, herding her into the side door. Just come in. Penny followed him into the kitchen. He grabbed a stool, parked it next to the steel workbench, and made her a cup of tea. She took it gratefully and sat. Hungry? She was. Sam set to work. He didn't ask her what she wanted. He peered into the fridge, pulled out some plastic tubs, some bacon and eggs, and palmed a half loaf of bread. They didn't talk while he assembled. She watched as he grabbed bits of chopped up ingredients from the tubs and tossed them into the pan. He toasted big, thick slices of the bread with olive oil in the broiler and fried up the bacon and eggs and assembled everything into 2 enormous sandwiches that he cut into diagonal slices. He set one down in front of her. No cheese on yours, he said, because of the whole lactose intolerance thing your mom mentioned. Penny smiled and stared at her sandwich. She grabbed half and squished it to see if she could negotiate it into her mouth. Pretty good, she said, taking a heroic bite. Part of the gooey egg yolk slid down her chin. Sam laughed and handed her a napkin. Hot sauce? He offered. She took it. So, she said, that's crazy about Ms. Lola XO. She hated that she'd brought her up so early in their conversation. Ugh. And she really hated that she'd called her by her Insta name. It was a self-sabotaging instinct she couldn't resist. Sam laughed. Her name's Lorraine. He took a bite of his own sandwich. Lorraine was so much less scarier than Lola for some reason. I was so relieved I didn't pass out or have a panic attack or spontaneously combust when she showed up, he said. Both times she turned up. Penny wondered how much detail he'd go into. If they'd made out on every sofa at house, she didn't want to hear about it. She sounds tough. Sam nodded again. Yeah, no panic attacks the first night, but I did get wasted on the second, he said. Like I'd mentioned in the email. With her? Ew, no, he said. After a pause, he added, I don't know why I said ew. They laughed. I got drunk at home as a self-respecting proper alcoholic. Are you an alcoholic? I don't know, he said, and I haven't decided if I've quit for life, like no champagne on my wedding day or what, only that it's bad for me right now. Penny missed this, talking to someone about deeply personal things. She snuck a peek and then shied away because he was chewing and she would want the privacy. You know, it's funny, but I got drunk recently too, for the second time ever. She took a sip of tea. Yeah? How was it? Fascinating, she said. Sam laughed. God, she loved that laugh. How so? Penny tried not to get derailed, staring into his eyes. They were deep brown, but tinged at the edges with a way lighter hazel. Penny cleared her throat. Well, it is a highly effective social lubricant, she said. Diminished inhibitions, the whole works. It makes everything so much easier. All the worrying that's usually going on in my brain shuts the hell up. But the worrying's good, he said. Your worrying's good. She smiled. Sam smiled back. She died. Yeah, it's exhausting, though. So it was a break? He asked. Like a you vacation? Exactly, she said. Everybody needs a them vacation. And you had fun? I had a blast, she said. I made a new friend, too, Andy. I guess he was an old friend. He's in my fiction class, and booze made it so much easier to talk to him. I was enchanting. Sam laughed. Penny didn't know why she was blathering on about Andy. She wanted to reassure Sam that it was okay, that he could talk about Lorraine if he needed to, at least for a second. He had great advice about my story, she said. He's crazy smart. That's great, said Sam. Wait, I gotta ask you. Penny held her breath. Who is your boyfriend? It's been bothering me that I never once heard of this guy until your mom brought him up. Not that you have to tell me everything, but when I was going on and on about Lorraine, you could have said something. I hope I wasn't so self-involved that I didn't ask about... Sam stopped and cleared his throat. Sorry, he said. He grabbed a glass of water, but not before handing her one. Penny died again. Basically, I want you to talk about whatever's on your mind, not all my crap. Thanks, she said, and meant it. We broke up. I'm sorry. It's okay. I'm okay, she continued, taking a sip. All things considered, Penny did a good job on the sandwich, two-thirds. She picked the rest apart and rooted out the bacon. Now I have to ask you something. She had to know. Shoot, he said. Are you sad that Lorraine's not pregnant? Penny tried the name out. Sam took a deep breath. He nodded. So it was true. He was still in love with her. Penny's heart sank. Did you want to be a dad? I did, he admitted. I sound cracked, right? Penny waited for him to go on. I wanted direction, and I genuinely thought I could foist all my expectations and lack of motivation on this tiny blob, and this baby would magically figure it out for me because now I had a reason to exist. He took another gulp of water. Dumb, he said. Like so textbook. There was nothing Penny could think to say, so she stayed silent. Can I show you something? Sam said, looking at her warily. Is it dead? No, he laughed. What? Penny laughed too and shook her head. Sorry, you just had this look. She hopped off her stool. Yes, you can show me something. He headed up a set of stairs left of the fridge, and Penny followed him. Sam flipped on a light and went down the hall. Penny briefly wished she had gum, just in case. The upstairs of house wasn't anything you'd expect. Sam walked into a dark room toward the back and switched on a lamp. "This is where I live," he said.
Sam. Talk about an escalation. He tried to see his bedroom through Penny's eyes. Even sharing a dorm, it was probably smaller than what she was used to. Penny followed him in. "Grim, right?" he asked. He watched as she tracked his possessions, his mattress on the floor, the box of clothes by the door. "Not at all," she said. "It's wild. I can't believe I'm here." She walked to the window by his bed. "So this is your atmosphere," she said, moving the curtain aside to peer out. Sam watched her reflection in the glass. "Good view. It honestly didn't occur to me that house had an upstairs. It's a great perch, the crow's nest of a pirate ship. Do you like it here?" He did. He stood next to her. "Yeah," he whispered. She turned to him. "That's good," she said. She walked into the middle of the room and glanced at his ceiling. "Chill vibes," she said. He smiled. "Oh," she said. "So I really didn't need to worry about you getting home that first day." He laughed. "I'm still sorry about that." Sam took a seat on the corner of his mattress. Penny sat down next to him. "All of house is soothing," she said. "I can't believe you can't sleep in here. I'd be out like a light." He wanted her to touch him, but she didn't. Penny. Penny, who smelled of dryer sheets. He took off his shoes and leaned up against the back wall to get more comfortable. "How long have you been here?" she asked. "Since the beginning of the summer." "About the same time all that other stuff happened?" "Yeah." Sam touched his hair. It was gross and curling. He tried to smooth it down and failed. He pulled his legs up and wrapped his arms around them, resting his chin on top of his knees. Then he decided it was too much the posture of a moody kid and unfolded himself. "I lived with Lorraine off and on," he said, "or with friends, or at home with my mom and her boyfriend. I was trying to save money for school." He turned to Penny. "You think I'm a loser?" "I don't," she said. "I would tell you." He believed her.
Penny. It was the hair that was her undoing. It was floppy, fluffy, even. He was sitting on the bed with his long legs stretched out in front of him, his back against the wall. She wanted to touch the tuft in the back, the craziest part of the cowlick, even though she knew it to be a huge violation of personal space. It also killed her that she couldn't poke through the small hole in the knee of his jeans to see if it felt the same as the hole in her jeans. The whole thing was demented. "So, yeah, I'm basically homeless," he said. Penny turned to face him. "Inaccurate," she said, and scooched over to him, mindful to keep her shoes off his bed. "In fact, you're lucky that you have a place to go." Penny placed her paw on top of Sam's hand, which lay on the bed. She had no idea why. She hadn't considered until that second how it might be a thing he noticed. She faltered. Not quite knowing what to do next, she concentrated on keeping the pressure light. Nobody wanted a clammy, dead hand on theirs. "Besides, this place is cozy as hell," she continued. "You're right." He shifted his hand. Then, for no other reason than to up the ante on the awkward Olympics, Penny blurted, "Is it crazy that you've met my mom?" He laughed. It was a good distraction. Penny snatched back her hand to pretend the incident hadn't occurred and shoved it in her hoodie pocket. "You seem mad at her," he said. "Yeah," she responded glumly. She was mad at her. It wasn't as cut and dried as Sam's thing with Brandy Rose, but Penny was furious at Celeste. Had been for a while. It goes back to when my mom got me a tutor because I brought home a C in French, she began. Not that she's a stereotypical tiger mom or anything, just that she thinks French is too chic to flunk. Her tutor, Bobby, was 19, pale, kinda on the chubby side, with long, spidery fingers and brown hair that fell to his chin in front. He was half white and half Filipino, and pretty tall, though his clothes could have fit Penny. It was as if at 14 he decided he was done buying new ones. His t-shirts barely covered his midriff, and it was a dead giveaway that he was peculiar. And his eyes. His eyes were beautiful. One yellow-green, the other gray-blue. It was called complete heterochromia. He'd explained how he'd gotten it, hereditarily speaking, and drawn a chart while talking about pea plants. But Penny didn't harbor a crush yet, so she ignored the finer points. Bobby was this whiz kid computer programmer. Her voice sounded far away, detached. His dad was this big deal at IBM back in the day and was friends with my mom. Whatever, my mom was friends with everyone. Still is. Most of the time, Penny didn't give Celeste anything to worry about. She only ever got A's and B's. Then, at the end of sophomore year, when it was looking like Penny would end up with a C, Celeste called Bobby. His teaching methodology was suspect at best. Bobby came by twice a week to show Penny pirated French movies that she'd seen before with the English caption switched off, usually Amelie or Breathless. They'd read books from the artist Mobius and Asterix and Obelix comics, a series about two ancient warriors, and listen to French rap music that to Penny's ears was exactly like American rap, except way more politicized. They spoke jokey nonsense French in horrible accents.
Attends, pourquoi les Sasquatch abandonneraient son sac à main?
Wait, why would the Sasquatch leave his handbag? Or,
Asterix et Obelix veulent faire l'amour doux à l'autre. Il est évident, n'est-ce pas?
Asterix and Obelix want to make sweet, sweet love to each other. Duh, right? Bobby spoke four languages. When he turned 15, he won a fellowship for $100,000 to skip college and work in Silicon Valley. But he didn't go because he said he didn't want to be bourgeois. They ate snacks and secretly drank Celeste white wine while watching La Déesse, a French cooking show where a well-intentioned woman with colorful blouses made elaborate meals for her husband. He was the first boy she'd felt entirely comfortable around. She could eat wet foods in front of him and be opinionated and goofy. They even mostly argued well. He detested inconsistency or contradiction. When Penny told him she was lactose intolerant, Bobby acted as if he'd caught her in a lie when she ate tuna salad in front of him. He couldn't believe mayo didn't have milk in it until they Googled it. August 17th was Bobby's birthday. Celeste had gone to bed right after dinner, and Penny had snuck an entire bottle of Zinfandel from her mom's stash. She and Bobby passed it back and forth while watching Iselle, the star of La Déesse, make duck aspic. They were sitting on the couch. Actually, he was sitting. Her legs were flung on top of his, and she was practically lying down. She had to sit up every time she talked to him in case she had a double chin from that angle, and she worried that her cheeks were as bright red as Celeste got when she drank. Her mom called it the Asian flush, and Bobby didn't get it. You were supposed to take an antacid to combat it, but she'd forgotten. Even though it was his birthday, he'd gotten Penny a present. A copy of Zero Girl. He handed it to her in a black plastic bag and told her about it as she thumbed through the watercolored pages. It's a classic, he said, and it reminds me so much of you. It's about a high school girl who has these kind of bootleg superpowers, and she vanquishes all her mortal foes, and she shoots her shot with her guidance counselor, who's a total G, by the way, and they fall in love. To Penny, the subtext was clear. A dork with a crush on an older guy, a teacher even, and they end up together because she makes the first move. It was romantic. I kept watching his mouth, Penny remembered. That's how you're supposed to show a guy that you want them to kiss you. At least, that's what I'd read. Sam nodded. It worked. Penny had willed Bobby to kiss her, and he had. It hadn't been her first kiss, but it was pretty close. Her first kiss was Richard Kishnani at camp when she was 13. He had braces, and she was attracted to him only because his mother worked at NASA. And Noah Medina at the movies, whose teeth banged into hers as he was going in for the kill. He was from Florida and had put her hand on his junk. He was wearing crunchy nylon shorts that had to be a bathing suit. She excused herself to go to the bathroom and never came back. With Bobby, Penny closed her eyes and moved her lips slowly and imagined how, if anyone ever asked, this would be the story of her first kiss. This was the one that mattered. The one she'd worked for. Bobby's mouth felt incredible. Warm. Soft, but not too soft. Wet, but not too wet. When his mouth opened and their tongues touched, she didn't feel nervous. It wasn't slimy or anatomical. It felt good. By Penny's count, they'd hung out on 16 separate occasions, which made them friends. That's why what happened next was so surprising. Penny had said stop. She was sure of it. Or else she'd said no. In fact, she'd said it more than once, yet she wasn't positive it qualified. He kept going. Maybe I said it too quietly. She hadn't cried for help. Celeste was right upstairs. Penny hadn't kicked him in the nuts, as any heroine worth her salt would have done. Instead, Penny lay perfectly still and walked backward from her eyes until she was far enough in her head that she was safe. From the couch, pinned underneath him, she turned her head to the side to find Zero Girl open on the coffee table as Bobby stabbed her in the guts with his dick. His dick was purple. Cartoon purple. When he pulled on the lurid condom, she couldn't believe it was such a bright and happy color. It had taken a few times for him to get it right, and Penny didn't know why she didn't scream or rip it out of his hands while he loomed above her. She just knew that she didn't do any of the things that absolutely anyone with a brain knows to do. All she wanted was for Celeste not to see. "It's not as if he beat me up or anything," said Penny. "It was so embarrassing," she continued. "And the thing that's so confusing is that I didn't get mad. It felt inevitable in some ways, an obvious conclusion. I saw him 2 more times after that and was polite." She gazed at Sam. He had a serious expression on his face. "I'm practically fluent in French now," she said. "My mom thinks it's because of him when it's not. He was proficient at best." Penny was dying to know what Sam was thinking. She'd never told the story to anyone else. "Do you think I'm broken?"
Sam. Sam couldn't believe a brain as animated and complex as Penny's had to conk up against that question. It hurt his heart. "No," he said. "I don't think you're broken." Sam pulled her body against his, and she let him. He felt her stiffen and then fall slack like one of those ragdoll cats that go limp when you pick them up. She yawned into his chest. They leaned up against each other for a while. "I gotta go," she said, pulling away from him. Sam wanted to stop her, but knew that he shouldn't. "I'm tired." She stood up. Penny swung sleepily side to side while walking out. He followed her down the hall. "Should I come with you?" he called out. "Don't be silly," she said, swatting the air. "I live 10 blocks away, and if you lived here, you'd be home already." Sam wondered where he'd heard that before, and remembered it was the huge yellow sign on the apartment complex across the street. Penny zipped up her hoodie and pulled the hood down low. "I'll be fine." He wanted to hug her. In fact, he wanted to hug her and then build an electrified fence around her, a fence that was encircled by a moat filled with rabid, starving alligators. It was ridiculous, yet Sam hadn't thought how nerds could be rapists. He thought of rapists as meathead jocks or else vile, faceless monsters who were abused as kids. Part of him was glad she was going to go back inside his phone. It was safe there, and Sam had so much he wanted to tell her and ask her that was too overwhelming to do in person. "I know," he said, throwing on a black jacket. "But I'll make you a deal. Next time I show up at your house unannounced, you can walk me home." Penny smiled sleepily. "My sandwiches aren't as good, though." "That's because I am the king of sandwiches." "I think he was an earl," she muttered. He groaned. Sam smiled at the back of her head as they trudged down the stairs. He killed the lights and locked up. The night was cool, just the tiniest suggestion that there was such a thing as autumn in Texas. They walked companionably in silence, both with their hands shoved in their pockets. The streets were quiet but not deserted. A smattering of couples, reluctant to end their nights, lingered by parked cars. Sam listened to their footfalls, hers alongside his. "This is me," she said after a while, stopping at the ghastly facade of her dorm. He gazed up. "You know," he said, "I see this building all the time, and it doesn't occur to me that people have to live here." The striped blue and salmon edifice with round windows reminded him of a monster version of those plastic Connect Four grids. Penny laughed. "Ah, but when you're inside," she said, "you can't see it." "What a parable," he said. "What is a parable?" she asked, tilting her head. "I always forget to look it up. But then again, I'm talking to someone who doesn't even know what irony is, so..." He laughed. "Nobody knows. That's a fact. Just like nobody knows the difference between a parable and an allegory. Do you?" She smiled. "No idea." "See?" They grinned stupidly at each other. "I think an allegory has to do with characters," she said. "Something something Animal Farm?" "Citation needed," he responded quickly. God, they were hopeless. "Thanks for the food and the talk and for being great and for walking me home," she said. They stood regarding each other in front of the elevators, wondering who was going to make the next move and what exactly it would be. Sam quit while he was ahead. He left his hands in his pockets instead of reaching for her as he desperately wanted to do. "Sweet dreams, Penny," he said. "You too, Sammy," she said. Hearing her say Sammy liquefied his guts. She smiled. "You ever think about how your last name in German is Baker and that you bake, and Jude's is Lang, which means tall?" He blinked at her and shook his head. He wanted to crush her with the fierceness of his hug. Either that or he wanted to bite her on the face. "Why so cute?" "I do," she said. "All the time." Sam watched her go. "Yo, text me when you get home," she said just as the doors began to slide shut. "Yo," he said, laughing. "Got it." Sam thought of a million cooler things to say, but more than anything, he wished he'd kissed her.
Penny. Sam House, today, 11:36 p.m. Home. Penny was half tempted to wait until 2 a.m. to text him back, as he'd done in the beginning, but she was too excited. She was in bed when her phone chimed. Jude had gone out, and Penny wondered if Sam would ever come over to her room. Her phone chimed again. "You do know that it counts, right? What happened to you counts." Tears sprang from the corners of Penny's eyes as she lay on her back with her phone held aloft. God. Sam was perfect. This was good, and this is what he had to offer her, and Penny knew that she had to find a way to be grateful. What choice did she have? And even if one day something happened between them, something wonderful and terrifying that tested their friendship, what would ultimately come of it? Romance was volatile, and if they came out of it with less than they had going in, she would be devastated. Penny couldn't go back to not having Sam in her life. This way, she could make sure they'd always be there for each other, as friends, as emergency contacts. That was the deal. That's the deal it had always been. Penny knew how lucky she was to have him at all. She trusted Sam, and he trusted her. That was huge. They may as well have sliced their thumbs and pressed them together in a blood oath. I'm glad you're home. Are you still sleepy? Eyeball emoji. Penny was wired. I may never sleep again. Call from Sam. Penny's heart skipped. She picked up. Hey, he said. It's Sam. She laughed. I don't know. I think we're moving way too fast, Sam. She could hear him chuckle. Penny pictured him on his scrawny mattress in the room down the hall. She liked that she knew where to orient him in the world. Right? We're reckless, he said. Crazy, she agreed. Hey, let's make a pact. Sure. Great. I'll pick up your soul in a half hour. Goodbye. Penny laughed. What's the pact? Let's be friends, he said, suddenly serious. Real ones. Penny nodded as tears coursed down her cheeks. We are friends, she said lightly. She breathed quietly so he couldn't hear her cry. Yeah, I know that, but let's be so good to each other. Deal. You know why I called? Asked Sam. Why? Because I don't want you to punish me for knowing too much, he said. What do you mean? Don't, like, go away because you told me things, he said. Don't decide things are weird. I'm not the one who decided last time. I know, he said. Let's both not, is what I'm saying. Don't drag the entire me folder into the desktop trash can so you can hear the paper rustling sound. You can't ask me that. The paper rustling sound is too satisfying. Just don't be weird with me, and I promise not to be weird with you. Okay, she said. They sat in silence. Do you think I should have reported him to the cops? Penny had many sleepless nights thinking about that. I think you should do whatever is right by you. What if he did it again? After me? That's on him, not you. Do you think I should have told my mom? Not if you didn't want to, he said. I'm pretty sure whatever you want is okay. Okay, she said. You know, sometimes they make you pay for your own rape kit. What? Yeah, you have to go through the swabs when all you want to do is go home and then certain hospitals bill you for tests. And all over the country, there are warehouses filled with rape kits that the cops don't even process. Like, hundreds of thousands. Sam didn't say anything for a while. I'm sorry this happened to you, he said. I'm glad I told you. Me too, he said. I want us to talk about everything, he continued. I don't want to ever not talk again. That was horrible. Well, I don't love talking about my stuff, she said. Yeah, nobody does, he said. But it's pretty big stuff, so sometimes you have to exercise it. God, she said. You'd think it would be cathartic, but it's more like barfing after you thought you got it all. I think once you're puking so hard, you'll burst a blood vessel in your eye as when the real work happens. So when it's just thin stomach juices coursing out of you? Yeah, he said. Sans chunks? Sans, yeah. Penny could feel him smiling on the other side. It made her miserable. This sucks, she said. Why so much work? The homework doesn't end, he said. It's piles and piles of emotional homework forever if you ever want to qualify as a grown-up. How come nobody tells you? Nobody tells you shit ever, he said. The trick is having a buddy. An emergency contact. Exactly, he said. That's the pact. It was a good pact. It wasn't exactly the pact she wanted, the one where they ran away together to Tahiti, but it was solid. I'm in, she said. Cool, he said. Good night, Penelope Lee. Bye, she said. Not 10 seconds later, he texted again. Have a willy nice night. God, he was such a jerk.
Sam. The next morning, Sam woke up feeling good. Not sensational or anything foolish, but supremely okay. Penny had already texted, and all was right in the world. He fortified himself with coffee and headed out to pick up Bastion. Eastside Nectars, where Bastion's mom worked, was a small operation in a strip mall on the north side. From the highway, the neon signs in order read, Chinese food, donuts, juice, then guns. Juice was the only hipster outlier. Everything else was as common as cornbread. There were only 3 stools in the front by the window and a kitchen area with a row of juicers in back. When Sam and Bastion walked in, the store was empty. Luz Trejo, a short, slight woman whose watchful eyes and delicate features had been inherited by her son, grilled Sam. As Brandy Rose would have put it, there was no slack in her rope. Bastion leaned up against the wall by the counter, scowling, holding his skateboard at the ready in case he had to scram. Hi, he said. He nodded at Bastion, who engaged him in a complicated handshake that Sam didn't attempt to keep up with. He let Luz appraise him, his dark clothes and his tattoos. It didn't help that he stank of cigarette smoke. Luz asked Bastion something in Spanish, and he rolled his eyes. What's your name? Sam Becker. How old are you, Sam Becker? She asked, wiping her hands on her pale blue apron. Her hands were at least 20 years older than her face. 21, he said, suddenly nervous. German? She asked. Half, he answered. Half Polish. A mutt? He nodded. How is it that you're associates with my 14-year-old Mexican son? She asked. Mom! Protested Bastion, very much seeming exactly 14. He skates near where I live, said Sam. During school hours? She asked. Sometimes, he said. No way he was going to get caught in a lie with Mrs. Trejo. Luz leaned over the counter and rapped her son on the head with her knuckles. Bastion glared at him. Snitches get stitches, he hissed. Luz shushed him. Sam kept his eyes on Luz and tried to look responsible. I'm a student, he said. I'm directing a documentary about Bastion, and I wanted to ask for your permission and to know if I could interview you as well. A customer walked in, an older white gentleman with a mustache. Hey, Anthony, she said.
Woo,
said Anthony. It's hotter than a pot of neck bones out there. It was a 100-degree fall day. She crowded Sam and Bastion to the side, out of her customer's way. Pineapple mint? She asked. He nodded. While she made his juice, she called from the back over the buzzing machine. It's a little late to ask for permission if you've already started, don't you think? Sam had no idea how to answer that. She handed Anthony his juice. Anthony took a long swallow and studied Sam up and down.
If you riled up this one, best of luck to you.
He nodded, fished 2 fives out from a long wallet pulled out from the back of his jeans, and left. What's it about? Luz asked. Being a kid in Austin, he said. So Oscar-winning stuff, she said. Sam felt Bastion watching them closely to see who had the upper hand.
Look, I'm a college student, said Sam. I'm not some rich trust fund kid either. I'm putting myself through film school.
Film school? Said Luz. Sound like a rich kid plan to me. Why not go into computer programming or something that makes money? Do you know the odds of being a director?
I knew you were going to say that, complained Bastion. Ask her about art school if you want to have your dreams punched in the face.
Luz knocked Bastion on the skull again. Bastion scowled and rubbed his head. Look, I don't want to be interviewed or anything, she said. That isn't for me. But don't shoot during school hours, and I want to see this movie before you show it anywhere. I don't want anything inappropriate. Sam nodded. And if you get rich and famous, you're paying for this kid's college, she said.
Can it be RISD? Asked Bastion.
Luz responded in Spanish for a while. Bastion said something back and laughed. Sam knew they were talking about him.
"Do you want a juice?" she asked.
"Sure, I'm sure I could use one," Sam said. "You need milkshakes more than you need juice, Flaco," she said. She made him something with beets. It was thick and the color of rubies.